Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Technology Partners, in partnership with Willett & Associates, launched the Technology Leadership Experience for St. Louis in June of 2019. On December 9th, we graduated our first two cohorts of participants, and this is a special episode featuring a panel of distinguished CIOs at that graduation.
We have some special people here today who have been very involved in the program as sponsors, mentors, doing pretty much anything asked of them, doing things that we don't ask of them to really make this special for you. So they stepped up one more time. They said, we'd love to be part of a leadership panel. So we want to help you get more, one more nugget today from your experience. We're going to go through their leadership philosophy, journeys, stories, kind of really unpack. So I'm going to just have you go down through quickly and with your introductions and pretty special gathering, so we wanted to capture it on podcast, so thank you for being good sports with that. I know it adds a different dynamic, but Mike, I want to have you guys all pronounce your last name so we have get them correct here, but just talk about maybe something about you that we wouldn't know about from LinkedIn, maybe something about your company we wouldn't know about, and just sure. Kind of just do a quick intro.
So my name is Mike Przasik. I'm a VP Enterprise Architecture and IT Strategy at Panera. That's my title, but that's not really what I do. I probably need to change the title. I'm really responsible for a couple different areas, pretty much all things data, our enterprise data warehouse and our big data and analytics platform, application development. We're in the process of rolling out a custom point of sale that we've recently developed. We've rolled that out to all of our company cafes, and we're in the process of rolling that out to our franchise cafes. And then I'm also responsible for DevOps and really advancing a lot of what we're doing from a continuous integration, continuous delivery perspective. I've been at Panera for 3 years. Prior to that, I was at MasterCard for 17 years in a variety of roles. And one thing about, I guess, Panera, well, I appreciate the plug for the grain bowls. So I think in St. Louis, when you guys were there, we talked about our goal of selling 5 million grain bowls by Thanksgiving. And thanks in part to, I think, some of you, we accomplished that goal. So let's not quit while we're ahead, and let's keep on going.
Good morning. So my name is David Hawkinson. I oversee IT operations here at SLU, and that includes our academic, our research, and our healthcare side. Many of you have probably heard of SLU Care, but may not realize that it's actually part of the St. Louis University organization. Let me talk about this room, if that's okay. So the building you're in was built in 1888. This was the original university. The entire university fit in this building. The Jesuits lived next door in what we call Verhagen Hall. And then when things were going really well or maybe not so well, the church was right next door. So this was the library. This was the library for the entire university, this room. Now, it's gone through a series of renovations, and now it's not open to the public. It's locked most of the time. But this is where everyone would come to study, where they would come to get their books. Now we have a full library next door, but it has a lot of history. If you walked upper down the wood stairs, you would see that all the stairs are indented after the 100-plus years of students going up and down, and the Jesuits as well. So I want to welcome you here. A little something fun, I guess, not on my LinkedIn. I love IT, but if I wasn't doing IT, I would probably be on a mountain somewhere on a snowboard. That wasn't going to work out as a career choice, but it was really appealing. IT worked out okay, though.
Sure did, and thank you for hosting us again, David. Really appreciate it.
Jeff Schuchart, Vice President of IT for Enterprise Fleet Management. No, not the rent-a-car folks, although it's part of the same family of companies owned by the Taylor family. And been there a little over 31 years, so child labor laws were different back then.
Nice.
Probably something you wouldn't know about me, I'm looking to have a second career, which would be announcing. At least that's what my wife is telling me I'm going to be doing. So down in spring training, though, somewhere warmer. So that's my next goal.
You've got
so
that
turn it back to you, Dan.
You've got that voice. You've got that voice, Jeff. I love that. So I'm gonna dig in, and again, you guys can jump at any point you want. I've had a chance to speak with them in advance, so all the questions are going to be very personal to them today. So, Jeff, I want to start with you and your career journey. And if you had mentioned 31 years, but if we had told you when you started your career journey, Jeff, you're going to start in sales, account management. You're going to become a liaison between sales and IT. At some point, you're going to evolve into IT, and then at some point, you're going to run IT for a major corporation. What would you have said back then?
Well, after laughing for a little while, I would have said, I don't see that happening, really, because, you know, I was more on a sales track. I enjoy interacting with people a lot. That just didn't seem like a path. But really, and maybe advice to all of you, is open your minds to any opportunities that might be in front of you. It may not be what you expect it to be. And in my case, I see it as more about developing the people than it is specifically the technologies that we're developing. And so, but I would not have expected it at all.
Good advice to be open. And, you know, Mike, probably similar for you. You started your career in consulting. As you know, you Panera hosted one of our consulting skills workshops. And so what impact did that experience have on you early in your career that's made you a better IT leader today?
Yeah, and even before that, I was actually a finance major coming out of college. So I didn't think I was going to go into IT. And I was looking, I thought I was going to go into banking. And I was looking at various job prospects in Anderson Consulting. Now Accenture popped up, and I liked the idea of working on multiple projects and traveling. That seemed like a great transition out of college. So I got an offer, I joined, and they trained me in IT. And I think that background in finance, though, has served me well, and it's allowed me to kind of maintain that business mindset, making sure that at the end of the day, whatever results we're delivering, we are producing value to the business. A couple things I learned in consulting, working on a variety of projects with a variety of companies and industries. First and foremost, I mean, it's all about the people, right? I mean, that's half the battle, is making sure that you have the right people on your teams and in your organization that are coachable, that have all, not only the hard skills that we're all aware of, but also have all those intangible characteristics that we've talked about, a lot of you have talked about today. The other thing I learned is, you know, in consulting, our job was not to stay there forever, although some of the partners probably wished that was the case, but we really had an objective to go into clients, sometimes do the work. If we did the work, we were doing it hand in hand with the company with the intention of really transitioning, sharing that knowledge to them so that they could eventually take over and fish for themselves. So because of that, that objective that we always had, it really helped me kind of develop that muscle of really empowering people that I you know, worked for me, that I was consulting, and making sure that I wasn't overly prescriptive in telling them how to do their job, but rather guiding and consultative so that they could do it themselves.
Great, great perspective. And David, you had a similar situation before you became a permanent CIO. You were a consultant CIO, right? And so you'd kind of drop in, take the role for a while, clean up the mess, do some stuff, right, and then move on. What did you gain from that experience?
I learned that every environment is different. Every company is different. It has a different culture. The problems may be the same, but the way you solve the problems are going to be different, whether it's because of governance or because of the people. And so I learned over time, never come in with a playbook. And so for something for, I hope this group to take is as you look at a different role or maybe a different company, you may think you have it figured out in your current organization, but remember, every organization is different. So I always took a three-step approach. It took me a while to learn this, but the three-step approach was come in, learn, listen to the organization. Second step was really try to come up with an operational plan with the team to address any of the concerns that have been raised. And then third was to really try to focus on the strategic areas. And so for me, it was about not coming in and thinking, okay, I've got this. I've been at four or five different organizations as a CIO, and so I know exactly what their problems and their solutions are, because I came to learn pretty quickly that every organization is different with different problems and different solutions.
Awesome perspective. You and I talked earlier, too, about politics. You learn how to come in and assess the dynamics, right? And I think a lot of times in our profession, you know what we do with politics. You guys love politics, right? You know what we do? We tend to be flounders. We bury ourselves in the sand and say, just let me do my job. I just want to work hard. Let me do my project. Let me work on this initiative. But guess what derails our projects and our initiatives, right? It's that stuff that goes on. And unfortunately, we have a negative perspective. We think sharks. Right? We think all this negative shark-like behavior in politics, but you know what we like to say is be the dolphin. You know, think about the dolphin. What's a dolphin do? Socializes, right? Collaborates, works as teams. They come up for air. They get out of their cubes. They get out of their offices. They know who plays golf with who, right? But be the dolphin when it comes to that politics. It's not good or bad, but great perspectives, David. One of the topics I love to talk to great leaders about is this notion of what got me here will not get me there. And I see a lot of people topping out in their careers, and they get pigeonholed, and they allow themselves to get pigeonholed. And they believe that the muscle they built to get to this role is going to enable me for the next role. And so, David, I want to come back to you. And as you've taken on different roles and moved up higher in the organization, what have your lessons been around that whole notion of what got me here is not going to get me there?
For me, the higher up the organization, the further you actually get away from technology. And I'm sure you have all experienced that one way or another. As a CIO of an organization, I really characterize my day with three things: people, problems, and politics. Technology actually isn't a part of that at all. Now, I oversee an IT organization. I fully understand that IT is a large part of what we do. But if I focus my time heads down, as you had said, focused on projects and not being outside the office, that would not have worked. And I would not have been able to get to where I am here. Also, your social dynamics are going to be different. If you're a manager in an organization, there are lots of other managers in that IT organization, and you socialize and you work together really well. If you're a director, you'll have fewer, but you still socialize. When you get to a CIO level, I tell people it's pretty lonely at the top because you don't have that peer group. And it's just something that every leader has to realize. You are by yourself. There's no one to talk to about your problems. You can talk to another vice president, but the vice president of HR or the CFO, they don't understand technology. It's a totally different language. And so you just have to realize that it's all on your shoulders. It's all on my shoulders. And find different ways of being able to talk about those things with others in the right way. So there's a few things that I've learned.
Yeah. How many of you have been passed over for a job that you knew you were ready for? Jeff, you've got a great story I'd like you to share that, you know, we get to that point, especially when we're in the number two slot and we're ready for that number one slot, and we know we're ready to go, but we get there and it's very different. But you had a situation where you got passed over, so how'd that go?
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, so just quick context, Enterprise Fleet Management is a separate legal entity, if you will, from Enterprise Holdings, which has the three rental car brands that we have. That was separated in 2010. So separation was driven out of primarily two things. One was to separate borrowing, the way we needed to borrow money to fund our leases. So we do the old Enterprise Leasing is now Enterprise Fleet Management. And so the way we borrow for leasing is a little bit different than the way we borrow for rent a car. And so that was one driver. The other one driver was IT, to spend on IT what made sense for our division and our company. And so I had formerly been in kind of a liaison role, but from the business perspective, I was the IT guy, right? I was the person that they would come to with any IT issues. In your mind, you're ready, right? I was ready to take on this new challenge. We're starting this new company, this new IT team, because formerly we had shared the resources of our sister company, Enterprise Holdings, on the rent-a-car side. I thought I was ready, went into the senior VP's office and said, you know, I think I'm ready for this challenge. And they said, well, we've chosen somebody else, and we want, you know, you to kind of be an understudy to that person. So that's a difficult thing, right? Difficult pill to swallow. But you can take it two ways. Either you can go back and you can be mad and you can sulk in that decision, or you can take it as a challenge and an opportunity to learn. We talked about learning. You talked about that. Learning and really that wisdom, right? Realizing and really became apparent the next several years as I began to study more and more about the things that I knew less about. Networking and infrastructure and some of the data aspects. And so it became apparent that I really wasn't ready at the time. I thought I was, but right. I really wasn't ready. And I just saw it and seized an opportunity to learn more. And eventually was over a number of those areas, learned a lot from the people. They taught me more, I'm sure, than I taught them. Yeah. But it was really an opportunity to learn and take that as a challenge to truly prepare myself for that next spot.
And you came to learn later that they were watching how you were going to respond.
Yeah, I think they thought that I was going to go option one that I mentioned before, you know, to be frustrated, be mad, and maybe even leave, right?
Right.
And I think they were surprised pleasantly that I responded the way I did. And really, it was just that I realized the opportunity to forge a new path for myself yeah. and really learn more from that and be a better person. And really, more importantly than for me, but be a better person for the people that I would lead.
Awesome stuff, guy. I hope you're taking good notes here. Stay on this theme a minute longer. We have 65,000 to 75,000 thoughts per day, okay? 85 to 90% of those are negative. I call it the boogeyman. You get that boogeyman in your head. You guys are big sports fans, right? You play a little hockey here, right? What was Gretzky's great quote? Missed 100% of the shots I don't take, right? So, Mike, I want to come to you and Panera. I know you and John Meister have this let's beg for forgiveness kind of mentality, right? Can you want to talk about that a little bit and how that helps you guys maybe go faster, innovate more?
Yeah, I think it's especially appropriate in the technology space. Because we talked about the rate of speed of change and how fast new technology comes to the market. Personally, I've been involved in big data and DevOps technology over the past couple of years. And every month, it seems like something new is coming to the market. So I'm not going to be able to keep track of it all at my level. So what I try to do is bring on people who are technically curious, who are going to really have the sense and the wherewithal to assess the landscape and figure out, okay, what do we need to implement to truly transform, you know, certain aspects of our business? And then, you know, I trust them. With that trust, I think you have to have, if something doesn't go 100% correct, you're not going to cast stones, right? You're just going to learn from those lessons. And no mistakes, just lessons, right? That's kind of a motto that we have. So it's really about really establishing that culture, knowing that I want them to continue to experiment, continue to try to transform what they can within their realm of responsibility, and then knowing that I'll have their back, right? If things don't go perfect, they're not going to be cast aside and held accountable.
And then you sell 5 million grain bowls. Boom.
Exactly.
Right? Mic drop. So I mentioned earlier in my earlier comments about the best leaders I've observed. Do you remember the 7 C's? Customer centricity, culture, cultivate, courage, change, collaborate, communicate. So we're going to pick through some of these right now. And David just got a little insight into courage from Mike, right? Courage is all about today, you know, working at fast speeds, making tough calls, having the hard conversations. You did something that I think is mightily courageous in terms of big org design, tough calls in this university, Jesuit University. Can you take us to that? And
sure. So each of us have a transformation story. If you don't have one, I encourage you to find a way of building one. And transformation isn't just downsizing or cutting. It can also be growth and innovation. So think through what your transformation story is. We went through a period of time. We brought in one of the big optimization firms as a university. And they came to the university. Every unit got a cut. And I still remember meeting with the CFO to get my number. My number was 50% higher than any other unit in the university. So I went home, promptly got a glass. I put a couple cubes, and then I filled. And then I refilled. And then I came in the next day, and I said, okay, let's do this. If we're going to do this, let's really do it a different way. And so instead of trimming the tree, Let's get a new tree. Instead of trying to make something work that's going to be almost impossible, let's fully redesign the IT organization. So we did. We went through a long process of fully redesigning how we deliver IT here. We do things very, very differently. We do a lot of outsourcing. We work with a lot of partners. We reduced our workforce by a little bit more than two-thirds. That's a lot of people. And this is a Catholic Jesuit university where we talk about care for the whole person. So how do you try to make your technology environment sustainable for a university that's wanting to ensure that they're sustainable while also keeping to those values? And for us, it became, how do we have these conversations, but not have them in my office or some office in a hallway, but how do we have conversations with people so that they know that they're a part of this? And every phase we went through, we would communicate. We would let people know, here's what we're looking at. Here's our plan. I was doing coffee with the CIO every other week. Hard conversations. And as a leader, you put yourself in a position. It's very easy to do this in the office and to get out the cards and move the cards. It's the easiest thing to do. But it's not right for the people. And so what we chose to do the hard thing, which was to get out there, face these folks, and do it the right way. For every one of the riffs, I sat across the table from every individual, because to me, it starts with the leader saying, you know, this is important. It's important for the leader to have that conversation. And while it was difficult, and there were many, many conversations, it was the right thing to do.
That's courage right there, right? Who knows the story of Hernan Cortez? 16th century conquistador lands what we now call Mexico. Everyone before him had failed miserably. So he lands with 600 soldiers, 5 million Aztecs. So math majors, good odds or bad odds, right? Cortez is the one who said, burn the ships. And I think about the best transformations, the best stories and outcomes like that. There's always a moment I find to burn the ships where we say, there's no going back. Because if you allow your people to stay 1 foot in, 1 foot out, they will stay there because it's comfortable. And when I've gone back and tested this with sea level after sea level, to a person, they all said one thing in common. What would you have done different? Should have done it sooner. So great admiration for what you did there, David. On the theme of courage, what's the common denominator of courage? In other words, if you don't have this, there's no courage. Fear. No fear, no courage. And at the end of the day, you find that courage is a choice. So, Mike, I'm going to come back to you. And how do you build up courageous people in your organization?
To carry forward with what I was saying before, I think it's about first establishing that culture where they're not overly fearful of, you know, a mistake. If they know that the organization and their manager is going to have his or her back, they're going to be naturally more courageous. They're going to be more willing to take appropriate risks. Now, on the flip side, you have to occasionally hold people accountable, because there's a difference between being courageous and taking appropriate risks versus just being overly reckless. So you don't want that. So it's a balance. Just like everything that you guys have talked about throughout this course and David talked about earlier, every situation is different and every situation requires a different form of leadership. And I think the skills that you acquire and learn in workshops like this are tools that you can put in your toolbox so that when you are faced with a certain situation, you can pull the appropriate tool out at the right time.
Fantastic. And Jeff, you've had one of those courage moments I want to highlight. Do you guys know what FUD is? Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There was a point where there was a big mess, right? There was a deadline. Your CEO comes to you one-on-one and says, what was your role in this, Jeff? That must have been a FUD moment.
Yeah, those are always a lot of fun. Yeah, enjoyable. Nothing like what David had to go through, and kudos to you. I mean, I think the thing I was going to add to what they both spoke about there is leading by example. Clearly, David did that in a very not fun. Mine was an individual program-level thing. We have 10 teams working on a project. And he asked me what my miss was in, you know, the deadline. And I said it was not in leading well, not in really making sure that the teams were equipped with what they needed to knock down the obstacles and staying in touch with the individual project plans. We have 80 different projects going concurrently, and so it's a little hard to keep up with, but I have to own that, right? Ultimately, it reports up to me. And so I talked to the people that were were involved more day-to-day in that. And I said, I'm going to go talk to the CEO. I need to take this. This is my miss. But help me understand, you know, where we are and those kind of things. And so that was my ownership, and that was not being close enough to at least the high-level details of those project plans. And so the ownership piece is big. As you grow in the organization, as these guys say and clearly have demonstrated, owning those things, giving your team the credit, but owning the misses and the difficult situations.
So this is a good example. Some of you mentioned in your presentations shifting from that supplier order taker, and you want to become more strategic partner and innovative anticipator. Innovative anticipator isn't always for positive things. I mean, one of the things that, Jeff, I think you did really well is you anticipated the question. Mm-hmm. And you knew the audience, i.e. the CEO,
yeah.
And you knew what his WIFMs were.
Right.
Right? So you were prepared for it.
Right. You have to be
prepared. Hard conversation.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. I want to just change up a little bit for a couple of what I call lightning round questions. Don, do you have a question?
Thanks, guys. We've got a lot of young leaders in the room. We heard them talk. Is there something in your career that really helped you get to where you are today? Or is there something that you did that, boy, if I had a second chance to do that, I would do it differently?
One of the things early on, I was asking for how I could take on more responsibility. My manager at the time, or actually a senior leader, said, well, I believe the job that you're in now, you were promoted too soon. You weren't really ready for that. And so that's not a fun thing to hear, obviously. But I think it really helps you understand yourself better when you do some self-reflection. So I look back, I took that as another challenge and an opportunity to learn. But it was also a good dose of humility. And I think that's a healthy thing to have as a leader, to know what you know and know what you don't know. And one of the things I say as I get a little more seasoned in life, not older, just seasoned, the more I know, the more I realize I don't know.
You want to build on that, Mike?
I spent 17 years at MasterCard. I was promoted up to a certain level and then took on this interim role at the EVP level. I think in hindsight, I wish I would have handled that situation different. And what I failed to do first was really establish relationships with my new peer group at the time. As a result, you know, I was just full steam ahead doing what I thought was best and probably didn't handle the politics as well as I should have. So I would have definitely handled that situation differently. And it underscores kind of the importance of those relationships with your peer groups, especially in larger organizations. That being said, both at MasterCard and then leaving MasterCard to go to Panera, the one thing that I think has really benefited me is just the breadth of experience I've had over the years, whether it's multiple roles within MasterCard or switching companies and industries entirely. It's amazing how much you learn when you do those things. And I think when you do develop through those experiences, it really prepares you for when, you know, the next opportunity comes.
So hopefully you guys are picking up some of these themes here. You're some constant themes, right? I love this stuff. I'm going to add to this with a lightning round question. So this is a short, quick answer. And part of our conversation, part of the program you've been through is this whole notion of communicating our value, changing the narrative. So what's one nugget you could give on how you might have changed the narrative about yourself, your team, your organization, your company? Mike, good start. We'll come this way.
We've talked about it a lot today, you know, really emphasizing the value, right? We're all in IT technology organizations. As you work with your business counterparts, it's critical that you have a clear understanding as to why you're doing what you're doing, and that every time you interact with these people, you remind your business counterparts about the value you are creating.
I'll do two quick things. First, speak their language, not your language. So don't speak IT, because they don't want to speak IT, right? The business doesn't want to speak IT. They don't understand it. So speak their language. The second is never forget about the ego. If you're thinking of innovation, don't think of yourself on, you know, the New York Times or whatever online publication. Don't think of yourself. Think of the business owner and get them to think of that. Because if they think about it, then they're going to want to be a part of it. That's the only way that innovation is going to occur.
Yeah, and I just add attitude maybe and terminology. You mentioned two items. So attitude, you talk about negative thoughts. So we don't have any problems. We only have opportunities to create solutions. So that's one, you know, from a terminology perspective. Attitudinally, it just creates a positive spin on that as opposed to a negative spin.
Right.
And then some of the other terminology, I won't let our business use the term expense or overhead for IT. It's an investment. It's an investment in the business. And those terms, while seemingly small, make a big difference in the attitudes of the business and of our team.
I think when you start to change the narrative, you start to see the results of it. You start getting invited to the first meeting and not the third or fifth meeting, right? You're at the table. Steve Schmidt had to leave because he had to be at this meeting today, right? Budget time. How many of you at budget time usually get good surprises? Anybody get good surprises? It's usually the other way around, right? Jeff, let's just take this narrative thing. Another conversation with your CEO. He kind of surprised you one time with a question he asked you around budget time.
Yeah, he asked a question that I'm guessing not very many folks in here have heard. So we're talking about the IT investment for the following year. I said, okay, I think you want two plans. And so one is spend the same and one that spend more. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what do you mean by spend more? Because we were in a growth mode, which is great and a great place to be for the business and for IT as well. So he's pondered that for a second. He said, bring me a number that's the most you can spend and still be effective, which is like, wow, okay.
Think about that.
Reel back for a second. So talk to my team and fast forward a little bit. Part of that, I mean, you get lost immediately in the spend the most you can, right? You just get lost in that. But still be effective is key, right? And I, for not just myself, but my entire leadership team, think it's important that we act as if we're writing checks out of our own checkbook, that we're using this money thoughtfully. And so we talked to the team and said, okay, you know, it would be easy to say let's double or let's triple or something like that. We didn't think we could do that. We only went up 50%. So not
five,
much.
5-0.
5-0, yeah. But we did that through multiple series of meetings to make sure that it was thoughtful in that spend. But it was certainly an interesting conversation that's a neat one to have.
That's awesome. Mike, I want to come back to you on the C around customer centricity. Amazon has their leadership principles. You know, we've probably seen those. Leadership principle number one, customer obsession. It's there for a reason, right? Mike, you guys are really good at this. You think about the customer journey. You look at it left to right, right to left. You pick it apart. Can you talk about that, and especially going back to the bricklayer story, right? How you get your people really tied to the cathedral, right? The grain bowl, not mixing the mortar out in the back.
Yeah, so for us, it's kind of easy because not only do we work at Panera, but we're all customers of Panera, right? So we use the digital assets that we create. We go into the cafes, and we get to experience that customer experience firsthand. Not only do we encourage employees to shop at Panera, but so we encourage everybody to go visit the cafes, talk to the people within the cafes that are using our technology, understand from them, listen to them, you know, what's working and what's not, and then take that back and then map that to not only, you know, eliminating any cafe friction that's currently experiencing, but also use that knowledge and that information to map out a vision for what things could be like. And one of the things we're excited about is our office is in Sunset Hills, and over the course of the next year, we're going to be building what we're calling the Cafe of the Future. Right there next door to our corporate headquarters. And technology is going to be at the forefront of that experience. So we're very excited about that.
That is so cool. I mean, some companies eat their own dog food. Some drink their own champagne. You're eating your own grain bowls.
Yeah.
I like this.
So one of the big things we learned during the program was really how to get invited to the table. That's one thing we've talked about and you guys have kind of each mentioned. Can you talk about the biggest challenges you faced in getting invited to the table and then how you overcame that? Because that's something we frequently see.
You know, it is a challenge, especially depending on the culture of the organization. Is IT viewed as more of a cost center, order-taking organization, or are they a partner? And truly, you know, we want to aspire, all of us want to aspire to be part of organizations that are those partners. And I think it starts by building up credibility, which comes from results. So regardless of what you're being asked to do, make sure you do it well and make sure, you know, you market it. And we all learn the importance of marketing IT. Make sure you market those results. And if you do those two things, they will start inviting you to the table earlier and earlier. At least that's been my experience.
I'll add,
continue to show value. Every organization is also different. Even within an industry of higher education, I've worked several areas, either consultant or direct hire. Some areas they say, yes, we want the CIO at the table, and some areas they haven't, and I haven't changed. I'm still doing what I'm doing. So a lot of it is what's on the radar for the CEO, and then it's continuing to find out how can IT provide value with that, and how can we be a part of that conversation. But every time that I've been able to join that conversation, and it hasn't been because I've been asking, it's because I've been able to show value organically, and people have talked and said, this makes sense to have David at the table talk about this.
We've been fortunate enough in my team to have a seat at the table really from the get-go. So that's been fortunate. I think the key is continuing to deliver success along the way so that you don't lose a seat at the table, right? That would be the worst thing to do, and to not be thought of as part of that team that helps lead that. We created what I call a culture of positive dissatisfaction. So let's celebrate the successes, but let's always ask ourselves how we can do better. And that continuous improvement is enabled and furthered by doing so, I think, so that we retain that seat at the table.
Backsliding is very much a real thing. I've seen it over and over, and it's painful. It takes a lot of energy and power to get that plane to cruising altitude, but once you're there, you can maintain it. But it can come down pretty, right, David? You want to comment on that?
So here at SLU, for instance, IT started on the cabinet, and then the president decided, so I don't report directly to the president, I report to the CFO, but still I'm a vice president, so he decided only his direct reports were going to be at the cabinet level. It was that way for about 2 years, and then it all changed back. And now the reason why it changed back is because he quickly realized he wasn't getting as much feedback and as much in diverse opinions as he had before. There was nothing I did differently. It was just continuing to show that value, continuing to communicate the value. And then people started realizing, hey, we don't have the right people at the table to have these difficult and strategic conversations.
Yeah. You guys know the challenges with communication today, right? I mean, we're distracted, short attention span. What's the average adult attention span? 8.25 seconds. How many messages have we bombarded with a day? 10,000. How many can you remember? 10 or 12. That's the environment that we are communicating into. How do you get your message to be part of the 10 or 12 and not the 9,900? So, Mike, love any perspectives you have on, as you think about your different stakeholders, which you have many, how do you cut through that noise?
I think it's important to have that clear vision of the business results you're trying to achieve. So, for example, a couple of years ago when I first joined, we had this initiative called one-to-one marketing, where we wanted to really evolve our loyalty program. And from the very beginning, we had a clear metric around driving 100 bips of same-store sales, comps. We use that as really our compass with every decision that we made working with the business. What do we want to do? When do we want to do it? It always came back to, okay, is it going to help us drive those 100 bips of comps? And it really helped us stay organized in our thinking.
Yeah. Last formal question that I want to come back to you guys here, but Jeff, for you, one of the words that you use often is the word intentional when it comes to learning, when it comes to communication, when it comes to collaboration. You're big on gathering. Can you speak to that, how you do that, what it means to culture?
Yeah, we're very intentional in terms of helping our folks understand their connection to the business and the business growth and what's happening there. So we have quarterly IT team meetings of all of our team members. We do have some folks that are remote, but we have Zoom conference technology that we use so they can dial in and also see the slides and those kind of things. But we're very intentional about bringing leaders of the business in to talk about what's happening in the business, the growth that's happening. And I typically ask them to have an angle for IT, right? So help understand what this new tool has done for the business, the feedback that they're hearing about it. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. We had a survey a few years back about how well do you understand your connection to the business and your role in the business. And, you know, typically you'll see maybe 60, 70, 80%. We were fortunate enough to get 100% of our team have an understanding of their connection to the business, whether you're on the help desk, whether you're an infrastructure engineer, network, application development. But you have to be intentional in those things. You have to talk about that. And we also co-locate right next to the business, and that's important for us too, so that we stay close. We hear the talk tracks. You mentioned talking in business speak, David. That's important for us to understand the terminology that they're using and really try to get our folks to speak and translate into that terminology.
Love that. And I talk in terms of the bricklayers. You speak to the NASA janitor.
Yeah, there's a story from the early 60s where Kennedy challenged everyone to, we're going to get to the moon by the end of the decade, right? And part of that was each and every person understanding that they had a role in doing that. And so we've used that story around someone coming in and going through and see a custodial person there cleaning up and ask them what they were doing. And they said, I'm helping send a man to the moon. It's all about the mission, right? And what your part of that is, because you can't do it all on your own. It takes a group of people working together cohesively to realize that dream. And so we talk about that story and try to tie it back to our folks, how the things that they're building or supporting are driving the business growth that we have.
Absolutely. So time for one more question. What is something, any isms, Mike-ism, Dave-ism, Jeff-ism, something that you guys find yourself saying frequently in your organization?
I use the term, it'll be okay, a lot. And so as a CIO, back to the three things, people, problems, politics, I rarely get good news. Everything that comes to me is usually a problem. And so it's not uncommon where I'll have folks come to me and say, it's the end of the world. There's this big issue. What are we going to do? And usually I try to have a response, it'll be okay. Because they're bringing something that they've already done a lot of work onto, they've already put a lot of pain into. I mean, it's definitely an issue. Fully understand. I don't want to downplay that, but it's going to be okay. We'll find a solution. It will get solved. Life will continue. When I do that, then it kind of brings the temperature down, so that now we can think about it calmly, quietly. You know, I don't know whether it's the Jesuits that help with this or not, but we find at least that's one of my Davidisms that has worked well here.
And I'm told that people come into the office thinking the world's over, and they leave like, oh, okay, we got this.
Yes. Yeah, we talk about that, and Mike talked about it as well, in terms of we're not doing brain surgery. You know, we're leasing cars and providing other services to folks, so we're not going to have somebody die. So we talk about if you need to be willing to be bold in your decision-making, and so we talk about not losing a digit. You know, if you make a mistake, you're not going to lose a finger or a toe or something. You have to be willing to make those things, because we learn through successes, but we learn typically even more through those failures and opportunities to make ourselves better. And so being bold and saying, hey, you're not going to lose a digit.
So good.
And I would just say that I guess a lot of people that work for me have a clear understanding of the importance of results.
Which is Amazon leadership. Leadership principle number 14.
Yeah, so we are paid to do a job, and we need to deliver results. And I think it's important to constantly evaluate whether you as an individual or you as a leader are producing results, both over the short term as well as the long term.
I can't thank you enough for putting a massive exclamation point on this leadership experience for these folks here. So let's give them some appreciation. Thank you so much.
This was such a special morning. We will be launching Cohort 4 at the end of February. If you are interested in participating or mentoring, go to the show notes to find out more.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.